This episode may surprise you, even shock you, but what's giving me more hope is that the damaging effects of toxic superfoods is becoming more well known. Now, many of these foods may be causing you symptoms and problems without you even knowing it. General inflammation, painful joints, autoimmune conditions, bladder problems, or generalized or even localized or weird, unexpected pain. So listen up. If you combine toxic superfoods on a daily basis, it can become an absolute nightmare of a problem, affecting your health and performance. This was truly a mind-opening episode with Sally Norton, as I saw so many interrelated health problems that may have oxalate overload as their root cause. Yes, oxalates. We get into the importance of your dietary intake of this compound, which is a hidden monster at the wrong level. This is definitely a wow episode, so don't miss it. In fact, share it with friends. And if you want a teaser, go and check my Instagram reel that went pretty viral. Sally K. Norton is an expert in the art and science of healthy eating and healthy living. She received her degree in nutrition from Cornell University and her master's degree in public health from the University of North Carolina. Sally's interest and expertise in dietary oxalates originated from her personal experience in healing pain and fatigue for herself and many clients. She's the author of Toxic Superfoods, Learn How Oxalate Overload is Making You Sick, and How to Get Better. My number one takeaway from the show, why so many healthy or even superfoods are in fact not healthy and are full of unknown compound called oxalates that are in fact a toxic compound that in the past was used to bleach leather and remove rust. What you'll also learn about by the end of the show, number one, the three most powerful steps you can take today to counteract oxalate overload, and number two, being advised to get your gallbladder removed? Wait. And listen to this first. This show is sponsored by FlexBeam, the best red light therapy device I've ever used. I use it almost every day on my body, joint pain, muscle recovery, and anything that is just really sore, even stomach pain or indigestion. The most valuable part about it, it's portable. You strap it on and it goes wherever you go. Please check it out on my website, madetothrive.co.za, for a special discount. Please send me your feedback and questions to either connect at madetothrive.co.za on my WhatsApp direct line, 064-871-0308. Thanks for listening. I'm Steve Stavs, Africa's pro bioc and health futurist, and this is the Made to Thrive Show. Hello, Made to Thrive Nation. It's all about toxic superfoods. Yes, it does sound like a bit of an oxymoron, but I've got an expert. And it's Sally Norton, who's got a degree, a nutritional degree from Cornell, and she's got a master's in public health. And it's an honor and a privilege to have her on the show.
Nice to be here.
Brilliant. And you've got some South African roots. So maybe start there, because I think that's important for the African audience.
Yes, I married a South African who immigrated with his parents, who were quite brilliant people themselves. And it was an era of the Sputnik time when the U.S. was very interested in grabbing some more brains. So they came here with their fabulous brains and had their children. They came with a 2-year-old, which is my husband, and 1-year-old, and got pregnant on the way over and survived somehow the surprising cultural shift that was for them, let alone leaving the tropical, beautiful weather of lovely South Africa and going to Minnesota.
Okay. Well, that's cool that you got a South African on your team and in your family. And today we're really going to unpack just certain foods that people are thinking they're healthy, having a lot of. And your book, Toxic Superfoods, How Oxalates Are Making You Sick, is a fantastic read. And I thought that it's a real important piece of a puzzle. You know, having been in functional medicine for 17 years and a physician for 25, I think it's important that we really unpack this. So let's go into it and let's talk, what is an oxalate and why is it important to the body?
Oxalate is a natural compound, a very small molecule that is made in nature, and it's made in the soil, it's made in polluted air, and plants like to make it. And we eat it, and it turns out that it's bad news to have too much of it. It's so much in nature that even your liver produces a little bit. And we're designed to handle a certain amount of this toxin, and that's fairly small amount compared to how we eat. Well, unfortunately, we're eating enough oxalic acid and oxalate crystals to cause real damage, and we're not paying attention to it at all. So it really matters to our health to know how much of a toxin we're eating. Unfortunately, we're all oblivious to it because it got left out of the story about human health.
So why did it get left out if it's so important? You know, I've seen thousands of patients and, you know, even physicians, you know, that I've lectured all over the globe don't know about oxalates.
None of us know. We don't get it in school. The people who wrote our textbooks aren't talking about it. It's very interesting that it's left out and it keeps getting dropped. I think it's always been controversial because we've always not wanted to believe it. It became very obvious, though, that oxalic acid was a deadly poison that will kill you. And it's actually even codified in Alice in Wonderland, a story written during an era where poisonings, accidental home poisonings, were becoming a big, big public health problem and had been for a couple decades at this point. And that was primarily because people had unlabeled bottles of oxalic acid crystals in their homes. Because it's a cleaner. You can bleach your white leather and your boots. You can take rust off your brass. You can take rust off of anything. You can bleach fabrics. It was very handy household chemical. And it had this tartness to it. And if you put this tiniest little pinch in your lemonade, you could add more water and get cheaper lemonade out of it. And so it was around the house. And it looks just like Epsom salts. Now, Epsom salts was a standard remedy, right? So if you went had a stomach illness, you might go look for a scoop of Epsom salts and take that. If you accidentally ingested the oxalic acid crystals instead of the Epsom salts, you were dead within 2 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. Remember, this is an era of relative illiteracy, that the people you might have sent to the pharmacy to get your Epsom salts couldn't read. And the guy who gave them the little package or envelope or bottle of salts probably couldn't read either. So it was easy to mix it up along the way because it's passing hands from the pharmacy behind the counter to the person who's selling it to you, to the person who's bringing it home, to the person who's handling it home. So it was easy to make this mistake. People were dying. It was a big public health problem. There was a very good experimental study done on animals giving different doses of oxalate orally, published in 1823.
Wow.
This was a huge, big thing, a whole new era of forensic medicine, understanding if a corpse came into your morgue, how could you tell if the person died of poisoning? Because you could easily slip this stuff into their tea, into their breakfast porridge, and so on, and kill your lover, your husband, your rich uncle. And the coroner needed to know, was this foul play? Because they're very worried about oxalic acid being a murder weapon. So it's been around a long time. And then we actually developed a diagnostic name for dietary oxalate poisoning called the oxalic diathesis. That was started in 1843, was it? Yeah. Oh. It's been around the clinical world and then lasted about 100 years and got kind of buried.
Just got buried for other sort of sinister reasons, or just was sort of buried by the pharmaceutical companies, or what do you think?
I think it was a progressive laying on of the power grab that conventional medicine did in around the turn of the early 1900s, really looking to remove the dominance of not doulas, but midwives and acupuncturists or chiropractors or homeopathy was a huge field of medicine at the time. And they were trying to turn them into quacks and be the legitimate thing. So we moved into this scientific idea that we could measure blood and we could get very objective. We got moved further and further away from the art of a conversation with a patient to find out really the whole picture that was going on and how their lifestyle was impacting their health. It became more and more, and nowadays it's real obvious that it's all about the blood tests. People no longer feel your glands and check you out and hit your knee. And, you know, really the physical exam is gone. So we've really moved in that direction for over 100 years now. And diet is less and less of a concern in healthcare.
Okay, so give us two avatars, Sally, because I think it's important. Someone's listening out there, they've tried many diets or many interventions and they, you know, they haven't come right and they've got a lot of symptoms. What are the most common sort of male symptoms that someone will come to you and then they go on a low oxalate diet and their lives are changed? And then the same with a female, so that people can sort of relate to, you know, an avatar saying, hang on, I'm struggling. I've never even heard of oxalates. I don't even know what it is, but let me try this, because it could have significant sort of change and impact on their health.
Yeah, I think the guys are going to notice things like nighttime urination and having to get up to pee overnight, or loss of good strength in the flow of their urine release. They might notice difficulty at the gym, where they're inconsistently performing at the gym. They may notice energy crashes in the afternoon, grumpy, irritable mindset, and a sense of discouragement and frustration in their lives. So it can be all kinds of strange things like that. For most anybody, that can occur. But I think the guys notice the nighttime urination and the urine flow a lot. The other thing is you start to feel kind of arthritic and stiff. So tendon stiffness, you can get tooth pain, you can get sinus issues, chronic infections that keep coming back. In the women, they tend to get bladder pain issues or arthritis, fatigue, and stomach issues, where they start really struggling with their digestion. That's almost universal, where some degree of digestive complaints are in place when you've got too much oxalate messing with your digestive tract, your immune system, your connective tissues, and your nerves. Your nerves are quite sensitive to toxins. When people die of oxalate poisoning, it's usually some combination of heart attack and some kind of neurological problem. And sometimes that heart attack is strictly a neurological problem, but it can be heart block because you have electrolyte disturbances, where this calcium chelating molecule reduces the calcium levels in the blood, which affects the pacemaker, and then the heart loses its regulation.
Okay, so for males, if we can just go into a little bit of a deeper dive there and double click there, is it really looking at sort of the urogenital system? Is it going to cause erectile dysfunction? Are they going to notice it in their joints? Or is this no standard pattern? Because, you know, it's quite, just looking at the foods, it's going to be quite a shock to people when we go through them in terms of what has high oxalates in. But what are the sort of main areas, or is it just so diverse?
It is incredibly diverse. That's partly why it's not in the clinical world, because you can't pin it down to a set of symptoms very easily at all. It shows up so differently in people that even there's a genetic form of this disease called primary hyperoxaluria. High oxaluria means a lot of oxalates in the urine. So when there's a chronically high oxalate in the urine, in a very rare condition, it can be from liver production, from a genetic disorder. And those patients are a great example of what oxalate poisoning looks like clinically. And for many years, it looks like nothing. They don't have symptoms. And then they show up with a neck pain for a while. It's like they can't figure out why their neck's bothering them. And they have stiffness in their head and they can't turn their head very well. Little things like that can show up. And then you can watch, you know, how they die, what really takes them out when they die. And oftentimes they'll die within 5 years of diagnoses. Although just recently in the last few years, they now have drugs that help interrupt that process in the liver and can lower the oxalate production in the liver. They also get a new liver, and they do try to do heroic things to help these people have lives, but they do die from oxalate poisoning typically. We don't know how well the new drugs will lengthen their lives. But the conditions they die in are really quite different. Some will die with no teeth left and their bones completely dissolved, and they're basically a puddle in a wheelchair. They can't really function because their bones are so weak and thin. Others die with perfect teeth and perfect bones, and it's all about the urinary tract or a stroke, or it's like completely different. It's the same disease of too much oxalate in the body.
Wow. I'm just thinking of how many patients have become osteoporotic or osteopenic, and this is not looked at, especially from a female perspective, and how important it could be, because it's obviously, you know, drawing calcium from your bones and your tissues to try and bind this oxalic acid. Is that correct?
That is correct, that oxalate is sucking calcium and other minerals from the body constantly. It's causing inflammation that also sucks minerals, because the inflammation increases acidity in the body. So the way you neutralize the acidity in the body is you pull calcium out of the bones. It's the chalk, right? The chalk is very alkaline. So you keep using the chalky bones up and up and up. You also get inflammation in the bones because calcium is a magnet for oxalate. And the biggest problem with this is that we end up accumulating oxalate in the tissues, and ultimately it moves into the bones and the bone marrow. And that's a real problem, to have particulate, nano, and microparticles. These crystals are quite toxic to cells, and now you've got to have inflammation, not just to, because it's an inflammation process that pulls the calcium out of your bones, but now you're filling up bone tissue that is low in mineral status with particulate damage. So the whole structure of the bone becomes weak and brittle. It's very easy to have breaks. If you know, just slipped on something or fell off a little ramp and you broke something, that's a sign. Or if you've got this calcified tendons or strange poor range of motion, maybe in your ankles that helped you fall, this could be oxalate causing calcifications, because it can cause calcifications that are not just calcium oxalate, but other forms of calcium are a reaction to too much oxalate in the tissues. I certainly believe now, after my own experience, my research, and working with people, that the number one cause of osteoporosis is oxalate in the diet.
Wow. That is a big statement from someone who's been in the research for many, many years. If you're listening out there, I'm just going to repeat that. The number one cause of osteoporosis for women is too many oxalates in your system. And so you need to carry on listening and watching, because this is crucially important. So let's talk about high containing foods with oxalates. And if you can give us a priority list, because I think, you know, when I look at this and just having, you tell people to eat real food, they're eating so many processed foods, and we've got to look at, you know, oxalates in all this processed packaged foods as well, how important that is. But then you tell them to eat real food, but then there's a list that they can't eat real foods of. And so, you know, I've got a bunch of health coaches and we do corporate work, and the more complicated we make it, the harder it is. So, you know, it's so tricky, you know, to try and advise people on diet. And it's such a unique bespoke thing, I think. And people need a lot of body awareness. They can use data. They can just use self-awareness, because it's really a minefield out there. But give us your priority list with regards to oxalate-containing foods.
Well, the priority is based on what you've been eating or what you were fed as a child. What are the foods in your diet? And unfortunately, a lot of the foods that are so popular now are pretty nouveau foods that really weren't staples in the human diet, but are now. Things like chard, spinach, almonds, cashews, peanuts, even potatoes are a pretty new food to the human race. We've only been using them as human food for about 400 years. Peanuts for the last not even 200 years. These are new foods, but they're standard. You grow up on peanuts, whole wheat bread, the bran is high. Potatoes are offered in the schools and throughout childhood and beyond. Now here in the U.S., we offer people either fries, chips, or mashed or baked with almost every meal. Sweet potatoes have become the better potato. They're not technically a potato, but they're very high in oxalates.
Very high in oxalates. So your sweet list, potatoes. Sorry, I'm gonna push you. I've listened to a lot of podcasts and I think your book is incredible, but we need a priority. I know you're saying it's in the diet, but are we saying like spinach is the number one? Because if you're having a spinach juice, or spinach is lower than potato, then lower than sweet potato, then we can right. go through the nuts. I think this is very, very important, because I think, you know, there are a lot of people suffering with this.
From a numbers perspective, you want to start with the beet greens, the chard, and the spinach. They're off the charts.
Yeah, off the charts.
Don't need those.
Greens, yeah.
Don't mess around with star fruit. That's famously deadly. It's so high in oxalates. So star fruit in the fruit department. And, you know, with the grains and pseudo grains in that department, the worst ones are quinoa, buckwheat, teff. Those are the terrible ones that a lot of gluten-free people are doing. And then in the seeds, like get rid of the chia and the hemp seeds. They're the worst ones there. And then in the nuts, it's the almonds are top of the list. Terrible. Cashews, second runner up, with then peanuts.
Sure. That is quite a list. And so when you say potatoes and sweet potatoes, you said the top three: Swiss chard, spinach, and beet greens. And then the next group, is it potatoes, or is it, you know, is it sweet potatoes?
Like I was saying, is it's not always about the numbers. It's about the ones that you've made friends with personally. So it's about looking at your diet. What are the top five in your diet that you're using routinely? Those are the ones. Just don't pick up a new bad one. Don't trade in your sweet potatoes for beets, because that's not a big improvement. Right. Yeah. So it's being aware of that whole list, but usually it's just a handful. For me, it was the sweet potatoes I was eating every day as a starchy staple. and some chard once or twice a week. That was enough to do me in.
Yeah. And do they often present? I mean, I had a good friend who was having sort of spinach and celery, these juices. Where does celery fit in with spinach together as a juice? I think that must be one of the highest amounts of oxalates you can get in.
Yes. Well, the celery, you'd have to drink quite a bit of juice, but that's what they're recommending, is that you take an entire head of celery, which is usually a week supply, and you have it in one meal. So that's concentrating it. And by juicing it, you're getting rid of the fiber and the stuff that might slow or prevent absorption into the bloodstream. When you just put it in this open liquid, you've got this soluble ion, this charged molecule floating in water. Now you've make it just supercharge it into your bloodstream. So now you've made it the absorption level higher by turning it into juice. So you've increased the amount by doing a whole head at one time, and you've increased the efficiency of absorption. So you've turned a food you can tolerate in small amounts into a toxin.
So what are your views then, Sally, on juicing and all these smoothies, taking all these vegetables and these fruits and juicing them and making them into smoothies?
They are an unfortunate waste of energy, time, and effort.
Okay. And are they causing damage to have all of a sudden, you know, we speak about, especially the juices, I mean, you know, just having this huge load of sugar so quickly, you know, it's just infiltrating your liver. But what about the vegetables now? Because now there's you know, concern with oxalates.
Yeah, so you've got the fantasy story about juicing is that somehow you're creating a vitamin supplement, that somehow you're getting more vitamins that way. And we really don't understand how the tannins and the oxalates and the other compounds in vegetables retard your absorption of minerals and potentially other vitamins and just add inflammation to the body, and is the reverse opposite of what you think you're achieving. And unfortunately, since we follow our heads so much and we're not really able to listen to our bodies effectively, we carry on with something that the body's compensating for and trying to not complain about. And you can do this for too long. And by the time the symptoms show up that the juicing is harming you, you have caused a lot of problems that take a lot of resources physiologically to recover from. And sure. The sad part is that we're often told when we start these regimens that if you have bad reaction, it's just detox, not tox.
Yeah.
But maybe it's tox on the way in, not the detox toxins leaving. That's a confusing question, and it's getting people in trouble because they're ignoring the signs that it's bad for them.
Sure. Very profound. And what is the tolerance level on a daily basis? I mean, what could people have? I mean, for the average human, obviously it's going to be different for different people with their sort of genetic predispositions. But what can you sort of tolerate in terms of your oxalate consumption in one day?
If you have a good, healthy gut with no permeability problems and so on, and healthy microbiome, you can probably handle 150 milligrams or 200 maybe a day. That would be a third of a spinach salad worth of oxalate.
Okay. How many almonds or how many raspberries or?
Oh boy. So let's think about this. I'm not sure if I can pull this off the top of my head, but that would be maybe 2 ounces of almonds.
Yeah. All right.
And raspberries, I can't tell you.
So that's not a lot, you know, if you look at it.
It's not a lot. It would be maybe a cup of chocolate chips. That's one I didn't mention. The dark chocolate, the cocoa fraction in chocolate is very high in soluble oxalate, which is easily absorbed into the body.
So dark chocolate's another one. Dark chocolate is something that is going to be high in oxalates.
Yep. And that's the kind of thing where you can get into a daily habit with it because, hey, it's so good for you. So great way to end dinner, right? The red wine and dark chocolate theme that's been popular for the last 20 years.
And what about alcohol in terms of oxalates?
Not much oxalate in alcohol. Some beers have a little bit, but basically alcohol, coffee, fats, meats, cheese, these are all very low oxalate foods. All the kind of sin foods are low oxalate.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And what about, you know, Dr. Shaw, and we do organic acid testing, we send it to the US and there's a figure that comes through oxalic acid. You know, how accurate is that? Is that an important test to do on your sort of regimen of tests if you do testing as a functional medicine practitioner?
It's a spot test. So it might tell you a little bit of something about the moment, but it doesn't really give you enough of a big picture. The whole wisdom of the body and dealing with this toxicity and managing your body so that you don't blow out your vascular system, blow out your kidneys, blow out your urine, your bladder, and so on, is that it's managing in the background and it's releasing oxalate or we're holding on to oxalate depending on the moment and what it needs to do at the moment. So you may catch it. I had an O test that showed I had zero problems with oxalate whatsoever. Absolutely none. I was fine, but that was the complete opposite of the truth.
Wow.
So it's very easy to get a false negative with a test like that. If you get a positive where you have elevations in oxalate and related metabolites, take that seriously. That is for real.
Okay. Good to know. All right. So let's look at sort of remediation from a food perspective. You know, what would be the most important things that people can put in place? I don't want to look at supplements and lifestyle like the biohacks, cold plunges or infrared saunas and that. But let's look at from food. What can people do? Because I'm assuming you want to try and get some citrates in or carbonates or something like that from a food perspective to mitigate against the oxalic acid.
The best source of citric acid, which helps to dissolve the oxalate, helps you release the oxalate, helps correct all that acidity, protects your kidneys from kidney stones, is lemon juice. And you need a minimum of a half a cup of lemon juice, which is about 3 juicy lemons a day to get that effect. And you, when you're clearing oxalates from your tissues, because now you're not eating them anymore, you may need a lot more than that to help deal with the acidity and the various other problems, inflammation gets going and when you're recovering. So the lemon juice is really important for people who can tolerate it. And if you can't tolerate it, you can use just baking soda and bicarbonates and use that as an alkalizing. And that will help because the body makes citric acid as part of the citric acid cycle. And when you have a more alkaline pH in the urine, then the kidneys can release citric acid into the urine, which protects you from the kidney stones. So just by doing alkalinity straight up with bicarbonates can help you if you can't handle the lemon. There are alkalizing supplements out there. There are citric acid minerals. Minerals are very important and it's hard to get enough calcium. If you can do a lot of milk and cheese, that's great. If you can do sardines and canned fish that have soft bones and eat the bones of the fish, that you can even make your own bone-based supplement by, you know, dehydrating and crushing bones that you've cooked for broth because they become very soft. So there's ways to get some more calcium, but usually we end up needing to use some supplements to recover.
My purpose is to inspire and empower people to superhuman health and performance so that they can thrive. But I need your help. I would so appreciate you rating the podcast and joining my community on LinkedIn and on Instagram. My handle is Steve Stavs and the links are in the show notes. This so helps me get the word out on how to live a thriving life. Thank you so much. Now back to the show. So from the diet, so because I love lemon juice, being Greek, we put lemon on our bacon and our eggs and we use it. So half a cup, if you add some olive oil and some salt in there, there won't be any sort of detrimental effects generally to have that much lemon juice, and that would be the best way to deal with oxalates?
Not usually. The only detrimental effects is that you have a lot of inflammation going on and you can develop allergies to things that you're using a lot of. So you want to be watchful for the potential of something you use all the time. If you've got inflammation from infections or from oxalate problems, then you may be prone to becoming sensitive to things and getting reactive to things. I think that's the biggest downside. Generally, citric acid will strengthen bones and teeth because it's the molecule that's holding the minerals onto the underlying matrix of the bone and teeth structure. So citric acid is good for your teeth. It's not rotting your teeth away.
Okay. And then what type of bicarbonates do you like? Is it potassium bicarbonate or what? You know, there's a lot of people talking about potassium citrates and then magnesium citrate. Are you a big fan of these sort of supplements or what supplements would you recommend?
Yes, all of the above. And it's really very individual what you tolerate. There's a subset of people who don't do well on the citrate supplements. They are typically made in a process that may leave sort of homeopathic traces of molds in there. And some people are just, their system is so sensitive, they cannot do well on a citrate. So you want to be aware of that. But generally, I find most of the people I work with do very well on the citric acid supplements, the calcium citrate, the magnesium citrate, the potassium citrate, and it helps them tremendously. And you'll get to know yourself and your body well, and you'll start to be able to tell and work with your own situation. But they can make a world of difference and make the whole process of recovery easier.
So do you think we've got a calcium problem because people sort of, you know, we've got osteoporosis because we don't even have boron, we don't have enough vitamin D, we don't have enough vitamin K2. So you're thinking because of all these oxalates in our diet, then what happens is stripping the calcium that we actually need more calcium.
Yes, we do, because calcium is the main binder that is the thing that takes oxalate out of the body. So the more calcium available, the more the body can release oxalate from the tissues and remove them. And one of the reasons for taking the calcium is because there's these transporters, they're called, these doorways that open up to pull oxalate out of the blood in the colon. And you can release oxalate not just through the kidneys, because the main exit route for oxalate from the body is the urine. So the kidneys are expected to do a huge amount of this load of getting rid of the oxalate. But your colon will help out, especially when they detect kidney stress and acidity. If you have calcium there in the colon, that's the magnet, the binder that will help it be released successfully and not just get back into the bloodstream and just be this kind of revolving door like a leaky boat where you're trying to bail it out, but it keeps coming in. So in order to plug the leaky boat, you take the calcium, and that binder helps you release oxalate and more with more avenues to go.
And what do the oxalates do to the microbiome and the guts? And even possibly, you know, we've seen a plethora of people remove their gallbladders, you know, been in practice for so long. It's just every second person, you know, in their 40s and 50s is having their gallbladder out. And that causes a lot of significant problems. So what's happening there with sort of the liver, gallbladder, and colon and microbiome and oxalates?
Yeah, that's a really wonderful big topic. We could spend the whole hour just talking about that. It's very clear that dysbiosis can be caused by oxalates. And the body's ability to manage that dysbiosis, because the immune system is attempting to sort of garden the microbiome a bit and have a say about what grows and what doesn't. And that whole process gets interrupted because you have immediate damage to the immune cells after you eat a spinach smoothie or spinach juice. Within 40 minutes, now your immune cells that are circulating in the blood are now injured, inflamed, and don't work very well at doing their job.
Wow.
So now the microbiome is just a kind of free-for-all because the immune system can't handle it. You also get inflammation and potential mechanical damage to the gut surface because some of the oxalate comes in these very hard crystals that are uber microscopic, but they're pointy and sharp and scratchy. It's like eating sandpaper. And that causes mechanical abrasion, which causes more inflammation. So you get yourself into a pro-inflammatory state where your immune system itself is putting out cytokines and pro-inflammatory. So this is just making a play day for all the pathogens. And you're also producing acidity, which favors, you know, yeast overgrowth and pathogens do better in the wrong pH. So you're definitely, and oxalate itself is toxic to the bacteria directly. Some of your friends get killed off attempting to handle the oxalate that's in your fecal matter and so on. So that's a problem with the microbiome. You're also going to be prone to infections. That's one reason why things like sinus infections, yeast infections, apparent bladder infections are oxalate related, because you're damaging your immune system repeatedly after each of these meals. Now, when you eat this food, some of the oxalates in a healthy gut might be only 10 or 15% move from the food interior lumen of the gut into the blood circulation, the hepatic circulation, and this is sent immediately to the liver. So 100% of what you absorb goes to the liver in this period of time, about 8 to 10 hours after the meal. It starts fairly quickly because you start moving that oxalate from the stomach, even in the upper small intestine. That's the main place of absorption, is the upper small intestine. So pretty quickly, you've got oxalate loading the liver. The liver does not have any chemistry to undo oxalate. It's a very small molecule. The liver makes more oxalate. Now you're flooding your liver, and these open sinusoidal cells are just really bathing in this oxalate. So they're using up a lot of glutathione to protect themselves so that they can survive it. And then they're putting out more oxalate. And it probably is getting hung up in these lipid forms of oxalate that are invisible under any kind of screening, scanning, microscope, very impossible to see. But I do think there's a load of oxalate and real stressing of the detox powers of the kidney, of the liver, because you're using up so much glutathione in the process of being exposed to oxalate after meals. Then you've got the poor gallbladder that's collecting sludge. A good deal of gallbladder sludge is calcium oxalate, is the oxalate. Wow. We don't realize that a certain amount of these plugs in the gallbladder is the oxalate. So of course, it's the first organ besides the gut and the immune cells in the bloodstream and the vascular tissue and the hepatic circulation. Then you have the poor liver, and the gallbladder is next. So that area is very much prone to oxalate-related problems. A lot of people are unnecessarily removing their gallbladder. And we see in the years following a low oxalate diet that people get some very interesting symptoms of the gallbladder coming and going and green stools and a certain amount of healing going on there. Elevated liver enzymes, these kinds of things happen in the wake of getting off the oxalates as those tissues attempt to heal.
Sure. That is well said and well articulated, from the gut to the liver and to the gallbladder, and probably all these gallbladders that are being removed. And I just think of NAFLD, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, that's happening. This could be just a massive high oxalate diet that's causing significant issues. Let's talk about processed food.
People are afraid of animal protein, and animal protein is so good for the liver. And fat is so good to keep the gallbladder exercising and healthy and flushed out. And a low fat, low protein diet is also, you know, it's a double whammy to be poisoning the liver and not giving it what it needs to maintain its physiology.
Yeah, we'll talk a bit more about that, because I want to talk about what people can eat. But just the last thing, fructose corn syrup and processed foods, what does that do to oxalates in the body?
Well, I think the processed corn syrup and the emulsifiers that are in a lot of junk foods are messing up the microbiome and making it hard for the gut to heal and recover. I think it's you're hurting the gut, which is more than digestion. It's sensory organ, like eyeballs and tongue and hearing. The whole gut is a sensory organ. So sort of blinding it and crippling it and messing the microbiome up. So I think that's the biggest problem, is some of these processed starches and these emulsifiers are affecting that whole ecosystem of the gut.
Okay, Sally, tell us what, and the audience is waiting, what people can eat, what's really, really good with regards to a low oxalic acid diet.
Well, if you're prone to cutting like little tiny portions of protein, I usually have to encourage people to get enough protein, women in particular. So don't be so afraid of butter and eggs and some meat and so on. Those would be good to have. But in the vegetable department, all the greens are low oxalate except the ones we talked about. And sorrel's not good. Sorrel's high, chard and Swiss and chard, spinach, and beet greens are high, but all the other ones, arugula, watercress, lettuces, all the lettuces, turnip tops, mustard greens, radicchio, it's all low oxalate. So there's plenty of vegetative stuff. If you like greens, if you like salad, if you want cooked greens, there's plenty of that. There's also the cabbage family root vegetables like rutabaga, swede, turnips, those kinds of things are all fine. That includes kohlrabi and things you may not be used to doing. What else? You've got sesame seeds are high, but you can have pumpkin seeds, a little bit of sunflower seeds. If you have gut problems, though, I think seeds are just going to hurt your gut. I think they're designed to be indigestible. So they're designed, all the plant chemicals that are harmful to us have effects on gut health. They're all harming the gut. So if you have gut issues, I wouldn't go with any seeds at all. Easier to digest things, fruit juices, all the fruit juices are low in oxalate. The only fruits that are high are kiwi, pomegranate, blackberries, really. And if you turn those into preserves and juices, they're lower. So even a little bit of pomegranate juice is okay. You just don't want to make it a big staple. Plus, it'll stain your teeth and you'll have brown teeth.
What about mangoes? It's very popular here in South Africa.
Very low in oxalate.
Okay.
But they do have something called urushiol or something in them. They do have their other little compounds. So just test your own tolerance for it, because there's like sort of latexy type compounds in some fruits and so on, and not everybody gets along with them.
Macadamia nuts, walnuts, and pecan. How would you rate those in terms of the levels?
Those are more medium level oxalate. And so small amounts of them are fine, but you don't want to turn them into entrees.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, so let's look at now specific sort of biohacks and, you know, cold plunges, infrared sauna, how important sweating is. You know, it's something that I recommend the audience and my patients over many years, how important sweating is, and hydration with minerals as well, not just water, but hydration with minerals. So what can people do physically from a biohacking perspective?
Water quality is very important. That includes protecting yourself from hot tubs and pools that are loaded with toxic minerals. The bromine and chlorine and all these things that are in treated water are more easily absorbed when you're mineral deficient. So oxalates have made us all mineral deficient, and you're just a sponge. So be really careful about that. If you have to get into treated water, you know, use some kind of oil on your skin, then wet yourself with less toxic water first and make a little hydroseal, and then don't soak too long in treated water. So, and then drink water that's really purified with the minerals added back in, with all the trace minerals added back in. I always put salt in my drinking water as well during the day. Salt is very helpful for the energy of your cells. It actually supports the kidneys. The kidney world's afraid of salt because it seems to elevate calcium levels in the urine. And when you combine high oxalate and high calcium, then you have a magic formula for kidney stones. But if you're doing your lemons and citrate, should probably be okay. So I really think water is important. And the next best thing is sweating and heat stress. It doesn't have to be infrared. It's the heat stress that's most important. The heat stress turns on the heat shock proteins. It turns on enzymes that lowers vascular inflammation. Oxalates causing chronic vascular inflammation, which will affect your vision and all kinds of things. Eyes are a great place, by the way, where oxalates collect, as is the thyroid gland. So the sauna can maybe save your capillaries from continued damage as oxalates are clearing out. When you stop eating oxalate, you're still high in oxalate because you used to eat them so much, they're in your system for a long time to come. So it's not like, oh, I'm fixed because I quit my spinach salad. No, now you're turning on a whole different project of reversal of oxalate accumulation, which can continue to stress out your vascular system. So I think sauna is like brushing your teeth. Like, you need to do it daily if you can.
Wow, daily, you recommend that. And you recommend binders like bentonite clay or activated charcoal or any of these zeolites or spirulinas?
Well, calcium is the best binder when it comes to oxalate, and people don't realize that this is your zeolite. It's a powerful binder. There hasn't been a lot of research done in any formal way to document whether any of those things help with oxalate clearing from the body. The spirulina and the chlorella are both low in oxalate, so you can use them freely without being concerned about oxalate. But I think those, along with the zeolites and so on, can be prone to lead and other forms of heavy metal contamination. And you have to find a source that you really can trust to make sure you're just not adding to the toxic load in the body. So anytime you can minimize the portions of those things, or minimize use of things that are kind of a question mark around toxicity, that's always preferred. Mm.
Okay. Sorry, I forgot to talk about fish and how important fish is. And EPA, DHA, is that important with regards to helping and dealing with oxalates, or does fish increase oxalate seafood?
Well, there's probably a little bit of oxalate in the oceans and some in the fish. I think that the cell membranes matter most of all. The health of the cell depends on the membrane, which depends on the fats in the membrane. The proteins that do the work of the cells are dependent on the right fats in the cells. And we basically have a lot of wrong fats in our cells. And I find that fish eating is really excellent. It's also good for muscle development. Get enough omega-3s, and that promotes muscle development as well. So I'm a big fan of sardines. I eat them every day. I had low mercury tuna with sardines mixed into them with butter. I make this butter sauce where I slightly emulsify it with a little vinegar and instead of mayonnaise. And so that butter fat is really great combined with the more omega-3-ish in the fish is a nice combination. I'm a big fan of fish. I wish we would take care of our oceans and our water so we can all eat fish.
Sure, that's powerful. Okay, so definitely making sure you get that EPA and DHA, maybe even look at an omega-3 index. Do you look at that and see how important that is with regards to dealing with oxalates?
I don't really do any testing with people. Mm-hmm. I let people bring their tests to me, and we work with, well, what's working for you? Because mostly people come to me knowing they're oxalate damaged, and we're trying to figure out what they can do. Because at this stage, they're trapped in a body that's intolerant to things, and they've got more and more sensitivities to things. They're worried about histamines and this and that. So we have to like pick our way through and find our priorities and find things that work so we can get the basics in place of enough protein, enough clean water, and get them functional enough. And then we have to figure out how to protect the gut in a coming decade of now oxalate releasing that will continue to affect the microbiome and the gut and so on. It's not a quick fix for some people. Other people, they start eating low oxalate and they just feel better and they continue to do better. And they get little signs here and there that there's some inflammation happening as the body's recovering, but they don't have that many problems. The people I work with, they're struggling.
Got you. And what about cold plungers? I've seen that help with high uric acid levels. I don't even know how the mechanism works. I've just seen that empirically here for so long. Do you think cold plungers would help with oxalic acid in the body?
I really like cold exposure myself, and I'm someone with Raynaud's syndrome and a cold sensitivity and kind of a somewhat under-functioning metabolism. And I started doing cryotherapy chambers. It was shocked at how much energy it gave me. And I got immediately addicted to the energy and the mood boost. So I started doing cold showers 3 or 4 years ago, and I haven't had a hot shower since. And I think just that is enough. Like I always take a cold shower right after my hot sauna. That's an easy way to start. You're already hot and sweaty. You can handle some cold water. I will do in the summertime, I'll go 3 minutes next door to get 40 something pounds of ice, and I'll sit in my bathtub for 8 or 10 minutes. If I'm in pain, I use it as a pain remedy. If my back is really bothering me, if something's going on, I'll do it for that. But I find just making your shower cold works great.
Sounds incredible. Just
we get cold water here. You may not get cold.
Yeah, you got to find it. You got to get cold. Yeah. I know we've really got a lot of information out here. I mean, this show has been just information packed with incredible wisdom. But why don't you just give us your priority list in terms of oxalates, lectins, phytic acid, histamine producing foods? Because there's just so many different areas here that are so important, and people just get lost in the weeds now. Do you think as a nutritionist that we should first look at oxalates, then if there's other issues, maybe look at amyloids or have a look at lectins? How do you see the bigger picture? Because you've been in the industry for so long. So not only are you looking at the research, but you're looking empirically at all the sort of clients and patients you've seen.
The focus really does have to be on discovering the problem of plant toxins as a whole. The oxalate is the number one, number two, number three, and number four priority. It is so important because it creates a chronic problems with osteoporosis and vascular and immune functions and metabolism damage. Like you're wiping out your thyroid gland and organs in ways that are very hard to recover from. So there's no question that oxalates matter the most. But if you're oblivious to lectins, you're not going to get well. Lectins help accelerate oxalate damage. I did that not knowing, despite my degree in nutrition, that slow cooking my beans was poisoning me with lectins. It ruined my gut, and that just opened up. I already had an oxalate problem I didn't know about. And then stupidly, as a vegan, doing these slow cooked beans really ended my healthy life. in 1990. I remember the absolute day when it happened. And you do not want to ignore tannins, lectins, saponins, any of these things. You want to be aware they're there. And it just, if you look at a food like quinoa, you've got it all. Lectins, saponins, oxalates. Yes, like even bran is not so great for you. So they come as a package. And so taking more respect with plants, we refine them for a reason. There's a reason most of the world eats white rice and gets rid of the bran, and why sourdough bread and fermentation, long fermentation, and careful preparation of these plant foods have been preferred methods for food preparation for all of human history. What's happened in the last 100 years is we've tried to expedite and we've tried to outsource home preparation of foods, and we want some factory to do it for us. And they're not going to do grandma's way or, you know, the great grandma of 2000 years ago. They're shortcutting left and right, from the production of the plant to the processing of the product into a processed product that sits on a shelf in a package for 6 years. None of those things are helping your health.
Yeah, Sandy, I mean, I think of my daughter, like, she's so dairy intolerant to casein, to the lactose. She doesn't do well with gluten. So now you've got that, and you've got the gluten problems, and now you're looking at oxalates. It seems like a tricky slope, you know. It's so difficult for people and their families.
It is. And I think the gluten thing goes along with the oxalates, because you've so disturbed the gut health with lectins and oxalates that gluten is a lectin. And so once you've got gut damage, you know, that's, but you know what's so interesting? And the reason why oxalate is number 2, 3, and 4 and so on is because when you get rid of the oxalate, some people can get back on gluten, no problem. They're back on bread and so on, and they feel fine.
Wow. And you still prefer sourdough? Is that your number one? If someone, because you're saying bran's a problem. I've just seen that for so long that bran's a huge issue now, that bran's got a lot of oxalates in. But would you say sourdough is the best option if someone's listening?
Yes. If you're using a bread product, a sourdough is a great option. And some people are doing these sort of keto fake breads made with eggs and cottage cheese and so on. And that can get some people through. But a lot of us who are this damaged, whose immune systems are unhappy, eggs are a problem. You know, there's so many ways you get boxed in.
Yeah.
It's okay, because there's always something else to eat. It may be culturally different, different than what you're raised on, different than what your friends expect, different than what's been served at a family party, but it's okay, because your number one best friend is your body, and your loyalty to your body is really what matters the most. And you will thrive doing that. You'll have a sense of freedom. You don't have to conform to everyone else's expectations all the time. You can just conform to what is going to make you do well.
Brilliant, brilliant. Tell us about the future of oxalates. You've written this book called Toxic Superfoods. You know, has it really taken off in the States? I think it's very not well known. Yeah, we're going to pump it as much as we can in South Africa. But what is the future of sort of getting these things out of the diet and making people aware? And how do you see it going?
Well, you know, there is a grassroots thing happening now. It's very popular in Australia. That's interesting. And there's a Spanish language version of Toxic Superfoods out. So I'm hearing more and more now from Spanish speaking people. There'll be a German version coming very soon. There'll be a version in Vietnamese and in Chinese and in Polish. So wherever the information starts becoming available, seekers will pick it up. Something in this message somehow rings a bell in those who are open enough to seek it. And those who are seeking it and they experience it, they can't be quiet about it. They're busy telling their doctors, their neighbors, their daughters, their friends, their book club. You know, the word is spreading, and you can see it in how well the book is selling. So that's perfect, because that's just the natural process of people want to help each other. And this helps us so much that we can't sit on the secret. And so I've got some more information coming out. I've got a whole PDF that you can get on my website for more data for people who need it. You probably don't need this extra data, but there's more explanation here for those who want that. You get enough out of this book to take yourself places with your health.
So where can people contact you? Where can I get that PDF or Instagram handles? Just let the audience know.
Yeah, please come to my website. That's Sally K. Norton. SallyKNorton.com, SallyKNorton.com, and check out my YouTube channel. We talked about juicing. The latest testimonial on my YouTube channel is about a guy who'd been juicing since the 1980s and ended up all wrapped up with arthritis and problems. And now he's like mastering the Matterhorn. It's a really fun little story. And check me out on Instagram, SK Norton on Instagram. And there's also toxicsuperfoods_oxalate_book. But the best place to communicate with me is really through my website.
Brilliant. Well, I want to declare favor and blessing over you, Sally Norton. You've been courageous, and thank you for your calling. Thank you for your book. It's incredible that it's going into so many languages, and I'll definitely get the PDF, and hopefully we can have another chat in the future in terms of what's happening with oxalates, and are we able to deal with them in our kids and in us and in future generations. We didn't get to speak about mental health, but I'm sure there's a huge role there. But thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you so much. And just a privilege and a pleasure to have met you.
I'm so grateful for your interest in the topic, and I'm looking forward for a continuing discussion because there's a lot more to talk about.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Made to Thrive show. New episodes are released weekly and are published exclusively on the Made to Thrive podcast link. If you're interested in receiving more thriving insights, as well as receiving other exclusive member benefits, visit madetothrive.co.za/subscribe. This podcast is for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of healthcare professionals for any such conditions.